everyone. This is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 59, and what we're going to talk about today is five essentials for financial success. Five essentials for financial success. I've talked a little about some of these principles before, but we're going to summarize them again and bring in some additional data to help verify the idea that these five are absolutely essential for financial success. So it should be a good show. But before we do that, I want to make sure that you are aware of all of the information introductory-wise that you need to. And the first thing up is to make sure that you are a registered user of the website. That enables you to receive emails of all the updates, let you know when new podcasts come out, any blogs that may come out, any changes to the website, that kind of thing. It's free, and it allows you just to have access to it. It also enables you to make comments to each of the show notes if you want to make comments to the shows. I would appreciate you doing that, and the only way you can do that is if you're a registered user of the website. So registered, you can do that in the right column of the website. And then also make sure you're following us and sharing us on all the various social media that is out there, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, that kind of thing, and letting the friends and family that you have in your contact list know about the Legacy Podcast so that they can also learn and hear and continue to grow the community through that. And then finally, if you like what you hear, then consider becoming a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year or $3 a month, and with that you have access to about $50 worth of value through the exclusive members page, and you can also help support the show at less than a quarter an episode. So I appreciate you if you do that. And then finally, if you want to give comments or feedback or have additional information you want to get or give to me, best way to do that is steve@thelegacypodcast.com. That comes right to me, and I'll be sure to read it and get back with you in whatever way you would like me to do that. And so that takes care of the introduction. So now let's go ahead and talk about five essentials for financial success. And the first one is a budget. Now, I know I've talked about this before. This is one of the most important steps that you can take. And it's important to have a budget because your budget is basically what tells your money where it's going to go. It basically helps you identify where your strengths are with reference to spending and where your strengths are with reference to income, helps you allocate those resources in such a way that you can make the most of it. Here are just a couple of verses related to that. Luke chapter 14, verse 28 says, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it?" Counting cost then is basically budgeting, figuring out what it's going to cost, making a budget for it. Now, Proverbs 16:9 says, "A man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps." Genesis 41, verse 35 says, "And let them gather all the food for those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities." Now, of course, referencing to when Joseph was in authority over Egypt and the good grain was being stored through the 7 years of famine and then the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine. Of course, they took that money out. So they were budgeting for that, planning for it, saving ahead, as we'll talk about another principle in just a moment. Proverbs 27:12 says, "A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. The simple pass on and are punished." So part of planning, part of budgeting is foreseeing evil and having a plan in place for that. Proverbs 19:21 says, "There are many plans in the man's heart, nevertheless the Lord's counsel, that will stand." So a simple budget, you can, of course, get very elaborate on these budgets and calculations. Of course, the best way to set a budget is to figure out how much you're spending on what categories now. So write down at the end of the month everything you spent and where it went, and then you can, from that, figure out what you're going to be your plan for the following month, and then set parameters and guidelines for that. But a simple budget is basically 30% of your income should go to housing, roughly, and 30% should go to other spending, and then 10% to giving, 10% to short-term savings, and then 10% to long-term savings if you have no debt. If you have debt, then the 10% should go to paying off your debt early and then waiting on the long-term savings. So that's pretty much a basic structure there, the 10, 10, 10, 10, 30, 30. And within that 30, then, of course, everything else has to come out of that. So that's pretty lean, but nonetheless, it's a program that works. And what ends up happening with most people, though, is they don't budget. And so they end up spending, 35% on housing and they don't have any money saved. They don't give hardly anything except for maybe 2 or 3% or 1% or 20 bucks here and there, that kind of thing. So they hardly give any money at all. They don't have anything saved up for long-term savings or for short-term savings, and they have more going out than coming in, and they end up getting in debt. And, of course, that's the reverse of what you want from a budget. You want budget to be able to squeak out more money from your various sources of income so that you can most maximize those to your benefit. And then a couple other tips when it comes to budgeting. One is use the envelope system. You can do this electronically. There is different programs out there that offer an online envelope system, or you can just do the traditional method of actually having an envelope and putting name on it for what you want that category to be, and then taking putting money into it at the beginning of the month for the budgeted amount, and then taking money out of that envelope for that budgeted item or budgeted items, and then when you run out, you don't buy any more of that item from that budget. Very simple, basic way. It's probably what your grandma and grandpa did, or great-grandma and great-grandpa did, and it worked well for them. Still works for us today, and you can certainly do that. Another way to do that is more of an online way, and that's using programs like Mint.com. There's also Envelopes, which is just what I mentioned earlier, an online envelope system. Mint.com keeps track of all your spending. You can allocate it for various things. The only challenge I don't like about Mint.com is that there's some designated already prefabbed categories, and sometimes they don't fit with what you currently do. And so you have to kind of make some new ones or play around with it a little bit. Not quite as user-friendly as envelopes, but envelopes, of course, is not free. You have to pay for that. But both of them are pretty good, but it's an online envelope system, which works really good. And then another point to make about budgeting is make sure that you discuss it as a family, discuss it, especially a husband and wife need to be on the same page on this. Usually there's one person who is more apt towards doing budgets than the other person, and they usually end up doing a budget and saying, this is what we're going to do. That's not the way to do it. You end up doing a budget and saying, what do you think? Should we need to change this here? Is this enough, or is this too much? What do we need to do here? Making some adjustments, making some tweaking so that there's both people are agreement in the budget, because then that then becomes a solidifying agreement between the two of you as to what you're going to spend the money on, so there's no real argument later on. And that's the key to a budget, is not just having something written down that kind of shows you where you want me to go, but actually living by that budget. That's the hardest part, but it's the most important part. You know, you can create a budget from heaven, which everything works out perfectly right, and you're saving all this money every month and so forth. But if you're not actually living under that budget, it makes no sense at all and does no good at all. And so it has very little value. And so the most important thing about a budget is you've got to live by it. So whatever the budget is, you've got to stick to it. And so you have to agree together as a family, agree together as a couple, husband and wife, to stick to it. And if there should be any changes, you both agree to those changes. You take some from one area, you add to another if you have to overspend in a certain area, that kind of thing. And so that works. It must be followed, though. So that's the budget. Secondly is getting out of debt. And again, I've mentioned this on other previous episodes as well, but this is so important for being able to build the legacy of wealth. And, you know, there's very, very few. In fact, you know, I would be able to venture that they're just in a handful of the Forbes richest people in the world who actually used debt to achieve their wealth. Now, Donald Trump may be an exception. He had a lot of debt. Of course, he lost everything, got it all back, and he's been back and forth like that several times, as probably partly because he has so much leveraged at any one time with all of his buildings and that kind of thing. And so getting out of debt is important because there are, except for the very few exceptions, almost no chance of you being able to become wealthy or build a legacy financially by remaining in debt or using debt. So Proverbs 22:7 says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. And Proverbs 17:18 says, a man devoid of understanding shakes hands in a pledge and becomes surety for his friend. You know what it means to be void of understanding? That's the New King's way of saying it's stupid to shake hands in a pledge and to owe one's livelihood to somebody else. Proverbs 11:15 says, he who is surety for a stranger will suffer, but one who hates being surety is secure Psalm 37:21 says, "The wicked borrows and does not repay, but the righteous shows mercy and gives." Well, you can't show mercy and give if you don't have something to spare, some kind of margin. If you're spending more than what you're making, you have no margin. And in fact, you are just the reverse. It says the wicked borrows and does not repay. And of course, Christians, we are not supposed to be wicked. Obviously, we're supposed to be examples of charity and generosity. And the only way we can do that is if we have some money left at the end of the month to be able to do that. Ecclesiastes 5:5 says, "Better not to vow than to vow and not pay." And so those are last few there. We're talking about the actual obligation to pay off what has been borrowed. But how much better is it if we can never get into debt in the first place, or once we're in debt, to get out of debt as soon as possible? Now, there are only a couple exceptions to the rule that no one wealthy has ever gotten there. And I mentioned just one. There may be a couple other ones that I don't know of, but very, very rare is it when someone can actually become wealthy as a result of a large amount of leverage. Usually it's the other way around. Your most important wealth-building tool is your income. And if it's being whittled away through debt, there will be very little in which to invest into wealth. And so you have to be able to free up that wealth-building tool so that you can then purchase assets that would go up in value that will eventually result in wealth. And so getting out of debt is important for that. Best way that I know of getting out of debt is using the debt snowball. It's something that Dave Ramsey, although he did not originate it, he has made it most famous. And the debt snowball is basically the concept that you're going to have. If you've got three or four different debts, you line them at smallest to largest. You pay everything you can on the smallest till that's paid off. Then you take what you were paying on that one, apply it to the next one, so that now you're paying a larger amount on the second debt. And then when that debt is paid, you pay all that was being paid on that second debt to the third debt, plus what was already being paid on the third debt, which compounds its payment. And that's the idea of the snowball, that each time you pay off a debt, the amount applied to the next debt is even greater. And so the debt snowball, it works. It works because you see short-term victories, because you get to see one debt paid off, another debt paid off, and you keep climbing up this ladder of debt and getting your way out, and it's inspirational. And so, it keeps you motivated, it keeps you encouraged, but it also works because mathematically it works, being able to pay off your debt sooner like that, and through lump sums and chunk payments and that kind of thing, really does have an effect on getting out of debt. And so use the debt snowball. If you don't have a program, you can find them online anywhere. Pretty much has debt programs like that. But if you are a premium user, if you are a legacy partner on the legacy partner page, you have access to the debt snowball in that. And there is a link there to it where you can download it. It's a spreadsheet in Excel format, and you can enter in whatever numbers you want there, and it will show you how quickly that will be paid off and how much money you'll save, that kind of thing. It's a pretty useful program. So if you're not that's another reason to become a legacy partner, is to be able to use that debt snowball if you have some debt. Number three is save some money. So let's kind of review here. First of all, we had some budget. You've got to be able to know where your money's going, planning for it, articulating where you want that money to go before it goes there. Getting out of debt. And number three now is saving money. You have to be able to save money. If you're out of debt, but then you're not saving money, you go back to spending just as much as you are bringing in, that does not build wealth either. It spends wealth. Proverbs 21:20 says, "There is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it all." And so the idea behind that, of course, is that the fool is the one who spends everything he has and has nothing left over in which to save. Proverbs 6:6 says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of your hands to sleep, so shall your poverty come on you like a prowler and your need like an armed man. A worthless person, a wicked man, walks with a perverse mouth." And so the idea behind that, of course, is that the ant is one who is diligent at storing up for future use, so that when the hard times come, they're able to access that. And of course, this was a universally taught principle. In fact, Aesop, in his fables, talks about the grasshopper and the ant, the story of the grasshopper and the ant. You've probably heard it before, that the You know, the grasshopper spends all spring and all summer singing and bouncing around and dancing around and having a great old time in the nice bright sun. And meanwhile, he sees his friends, the ants, over, and they're gathering in, sweating, working hard. Well, I don't know if it's ant sweat or not. I'm paraphrasing here. But anyway, they're working hard and diligently trying to acquire as much food as they possibly can and bringing it back into their home. And, you know, they're limiting themselves to their enjoyment, limiting themselves to their activities for the purpose of being able to store up some of this excess now so that later they can have it. And, of course, then the fall starts coming and gets a little bit cooler, and the grasshopper, you know, tries to find some food, but it's starting to get pretty sparse. And wintertime comes upon them, and now, of course, the grasshopper is starving and about to die. He knocks on the ant's door. And, of course, this is all just, you know, fictitious. Ants don't have a door. But nonetheless, ants knocks on the door, finds that the ants are well-fed, comforted in their hole. And you know, the grasshopper begs the ant to be able to give them some food. And the ants, of course, tells him, no can do. We worked hard while you were out playing around, and now we're going to be able to eat while you are going to die. And the grasshopper dies. Now, the truth is, that's kind of where the story ends. But in reality, what would happen is, of course, that grasshopper would die and start to deteriorate. And then next spring, as the ants come out, they would see it there, and they would then take the grasshopper, and they would end up taking it back into their home as food the following year. And so the idea behind that principle in the ants, even as the Proverbs speak of the ants, it says, go to you sluggard, or go to the ants, you sluggard, and consider its ways. And so the idea, of course, is that we need to be diligent, just like the ant, in storing away for future purposes. Now, we don't know exactly what emergencies there be. We don't know what challenges there may be. We don't know what things we might have to buy in the future. We don't know what we might have to have these resources for. But if we have nothing saved up, we will not be able to access them. We'll be like the grasshopper at the door, dying, waiting for somebody else to provide us with something. Of course, that's what our problem has been in our society. And so much now, we've got so many people dependent upon the government because they haven't taken the necessary steps to provide for themselves. And so as a result, there becomes more and more who are needy, more and more who are dependent upon others to provide for them, when all along they could have provided for themselves had they saved some money. And so we, if we're going to be leaving a legacy, need to be sure that we are saving money for future use. And then number four is give. So we have to have a budget. We have to get out of debt. We have to save some money, but we also have to give. Proverbs 3:9 says, honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase. So one of the ways in which we give is we give to the Lord. Matthew 23:23 says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of the mint and the anise and the cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. And so there he's speaking to the Pharisees, saying that what they had done in terms of tithing all of their production, even from their herb garden, was a good thing. But he also says that, of course, they were lacking in the meatier matters of the law. But by doing that, he doesn't deny the fact that giving is vitally important. In fact, he says that it is absolutely important. They should have done this. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7, so let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. Malachi 3:8 says, will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what have you robbed you? In tithes and offerings? Malachi 3:10 says, bring all the tithes in the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. And try me now in this, says the Lord of hosts. I will now open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it. And why is he going to do that? He's going to do that because the people of Malachi's day, I don't know if they weren't doing it too much, but the implication was from the prophecy that they were supposed to do this, and if they did this, then the result would be a great abundance. And what was it they were supposed to do? They were supposed to give. And they were to give primarily to God in the form of tithe, and that through that, then the tithe went to various means of support. Proverbs 3, verse 27 says, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due, when it is in the power of your hand to do so. You know, we need more people who have the power within their hand to do good so that we can do more good, and that it is upon our obligation to be able to do that. And so, you know, the scriptures as well as practical life tells us that there are several things we need to give to. One, we need to give, you know, the tithe to the local church, be able to support the various ministries of the church and have a direct say as to how that's supposed to be used. And then we're supposed to give additionally as well, not just to the church, not just to that ministry, but we're supposed to give to other needs, charitable contributions, those kinds of things that are around all over. And the more that we're able to do that, the more we're able to help, truly help people, not have people become dependent upon you or upon the government or something like that. And then, I've always heard before that a good way of looking at giving is to look at a hand that is clenched around some money. If you take a quarter or something like that, preferably a 1964 or previous coin, it's actually worth something because of the silver that's in it. But if you take a coin and you hold on to that coin really, really tight, squeezing it in your hand, you're not going to be able to let go of that coin. It's not going to escape, which is a good thing, right? But it's also a bad thing because you're not able to open up your hand and receive more. So all you'll ever have is that one quarter in that hand until you choose to open up that hand. Well, that's the way it is with giving. Sometimes we wonder why we're not receiving more, and partly it may be because we're also not giving more. And as we open our hand, we'll be able to give more, but we'll also be able to receive more in return. And so closed hand is not what we want. We want an open hand, willing to give. And then the fifth essential for financial success is having healthy relationships. Let me explain what I mean. Unless we have appropriate boundaries, unless we have healthy relationships in our life, our money will suffer because we will be torn, and that money will be separated from us because of the various obligations that we have. So let's look at a few examples. First of all, your children don't move out. You are, you know, raised your kids and they're 24 and 26 and 28 or whatever it might be. And they should be off on their own, but instead they're at home. And that's an unhealthy relationship. It's not right that a child that age should be at home. Now, I know there are some who have daughters that are protecting their daughters and leaving them at home, and that's all fine. I'm talking about, particularly in this case, men who should be out in the workforce working, doing their job, that kind of thing, and they're not, and they're hanging around the house. And that's an unhealthy relationship. And when in that kind of situation, what's going to end up happening is that you're going to end up losing financially because of the extra burden that is placed upon you for that. And then probably the best example of how poor relationships diminish wealth is through divorce. And I heard one person say one time that divorce basically makes your marriage a financial transaction. In other words, when you go to court and they settle things for the divorce, it's basically going to be figuring out exactly how much you have and how much your worth is and how much contribution the wife made or the husband made to the contribution, and then dividing it up according to those agreements. And as you might imagine, if that is the situation of your life, you're not going to be able to be very successful because part of your money is going to be leaving through child support, alimony, whatever it is. Part of your money is going to be lost as a result of dividing up the resources that you have acquired and the wealth that you have acquired during that time. And so an unhealthy relationship in that sense, it has a dramatic effect upon one's wealth. And then, you know, you could use any other kind of example you might think of. You know, one example would be, you know, parents who are dysfunctional with money. We hear, often of children having to help out their parents. And I believe that children should help out their parents, particularly as they get older in life and they, you know, acquire maybe some difficulties getting around or some mental issues or something like that. And if we can hold them with us and house them with us and take care of them with us, that's all a great thing. The problem is when we have parents who are mismanaging their money, who aren't using it very wisely, and the burden falls upon us, and they call us up and they want some assistance. Now, I'm grateful that my parents haven't certainly done that, and by any means, they've always done the opposite and give us more than what we've ever given to them. But there are parents out there who, out of a dysfunctional relationship, are in burdening their children beyond what is helpful for the building up of wealth. And, you know, the same thing can be said, a brother or sister, you can, every family's got that uncle. Every family's got that one who seems to be out of sorts with everybody else. And that's the one always seems to end up causing problems financially for the family, or arguing wills, or arguing money, and all this kind of thing. And when that happens, when there's not healthy relationship, there's not healthy boundary, then the money dissipates and the wealth is not maintained and is not built. And as a result, God's people suffer, and the legacy of finances, the financial legacy that we have designed to bring good and abundance, actually brings a curse. And so if you are in one of those relationships where your finances are being torn because your inability to say no, maybe, or because you feel obligated or manipulated or something like that to help out beyond what you are capable, then you need to realize the destructive nature that that relationship has and to get away from it so that you can have some modicum of success financially. And for those of you who may be listening who do have healthy relationships and they are good, then that's a great thing, and you are well on your way. And I want to say one point, particularly to parents as they train up their children. It's important that we develop a good relationship with them. Obviously, they're going to be the ones taking care of us in our old age. But also, if we develop any kind of wealth and we end up passing that on to the next generation, they need to be able to use that wisely and exercise the talent that they have and the training that you've given it, all those kinds of things, to continue to further the wealth and to give more of it away than you were able to give. But that's not possible if you don't have those healthy relationships first. So those are the five essentials for financial success: budgeting, getting out of debt, saving money, giving, and having healthy relationships. Well, hopefully that helps. Go back, take a look at each of these, see if there's any issue in your life that is contrary to these, and then make the necessary changes so that you can be strong financially and have a legacy that is abundant for one generation after another. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generation legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
Who believe that the world will still be changed by just